This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
G'day and welcome to Manawatu Metal, Metalheads Radio. Local, national and international news, interviews and the latest new releases brought to you by MPR, Manawatu People's Radio. G'day and welcome to Manawatu Metal, Metalheads Radio. This week we were lucky enough to talk with Kane from Believe in Nothing. Then we have a chat with Eric from Bergfried, and we finish it all off with Jimmy from Mastiff. So full of interviews this week. Before we do get into this, we only have one track from Believe in Nothing. We're going to have the track Complete Desolation, then we'll have the first part of the interview. We'll be right back. Today we're talking with Kane from the band Believe in Nothing. They're about to release their newest album, Rot, on the 31st of October. If I'm correct, that's Halloween, isn't it?
That is Halloween, yep. But by no means is our album an effort to fall into that spooky kind of horror category. It's if you find social collapse and what happens after World War III, Halloween, then it's for you. But it's not a Halloween album.
Fair enough, fair enough. I was just reading before that apparently the French are saying that we need to get ready for they're getting ready all their hospitals and everything for next year being World War III.
Oh really? Well, that'll be great for post release of our album, I suppose. Very fitting. Yeah.
It's a rather horrible thought, but still, it's there. Anyway, so how are you guys going to celebrate the release of the album?
So we are going to be going on our first long tour. We've self-booked a tour from the 27th of November till the 15th of December. So yeah, we'll be going out across the UK, starting at the Black Hart in Camden in London, and then going up into Scotland, and then back down the UK and ending in Brighton at Green Door Store.
Oh mate, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it should be good. Yeah.
So is a lot of your stuff do it yourself? Do you guys sort of do it that way as a band rather than having somebody manage and all that sort of carry on?
Yeah, we have a pretty hard DIY ethos in the band. We do have a manager. Their name's George. They play in the band Deaf Goals, and they are amazing. If people haven't checked out Kill 'Em With Kindness, the EP that Deaf Goals just dropped, please listen to that. It's very important. But yeah, we do hold on to a lot of like DIY ethos. Like, we haven't got a booking agent at the moment, so we like beg, steal and borrow for shows, and are lucky enough that people have been willing to take a chance on us for this tour. So yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. So you've released the four singles so far. Could you tell us a little bit about the songs?
Yeah, where do you want me to start? What song would you like to know about first?
Well, the bad thing is I haven't actually written down the list of songs. So I have to, you're going to have to lead us on in the actual singles names.
No, that's good. So our first single that we brought out was What Would You Do? And that song is about getting into some trouble in just an unremarkable like British town centre, and being confronted with someone that you've got an issue with, and it turning into quite a violent affair in front of a crowd, and more sort of poking towards what a crowd does, what a crowd of people does when confronted with such violence, such everyday violence. And then the song kind of takes a spin on its head. And it was something that we added in after. It was like a sort of plan B in the song, where the protagonist in the song decides, well, actually, I'm enjoying this. Like, I wanted to die. I want you to fucking kill me. Like, cut me up. Let's go. So yeah, that's the first song. And then the second single we brought out was Complete Desolation. That is just, it's about like post World War III, post civilization, like nuclear warfare has happened, it's gone. The moss on the creaking, like rusted embers of buildings has rotted away, and it is what is going on further in the future, the complete desolation of humankind. So a slight change of tack on that one. And then Fistful of Worms came out after that. That is the first song that myself and Jasper, the drummer of our band, wrote. And it's a really bizarre and aggressive anthem of revenge and vitriol. Like a twisted killer's confession kind of thing. And then we brought out Boiling Stone, which is really just a lament to the sheer unfathomable scale of death that happened in Hiroshima and just generally nuclear warfare. We just brought out our new single Gut, which is a point towards this untethering of society and the cruel world of the benefit system and the heartless nature of that, especially in the UK. The last 14 years have been very, very tough on people.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I'm sure it's not just the UK that's feeling that. It's across
Yeah, true.
it's a global thing. But
Yeah,
it is
100%.
important for to respond to the things that are happening in your country, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, you know what, like writing the album and writing the lyrics, it didn't take a lot, man. Like all you have to do is like if you're into making music about collapse and society and like all you have to do is just suck that stuff in and just reflect it. It didn't take a lot. Like, and whether you're in like Eastbourne, London, Brighton, Scotland, New Zealand, America, wherever, the world isn't in a good place. It's tough to see.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. So social media interaction. You guys, how do people find you? And because I couldn't find you on Facebook.
Yeah, we don't have Facebook. I suppose that's part of us being a bit lazy, if anything. Maybe we should get Facebook. What do you think, Terry? Do you think we should get Facebook?
Oh, it's often a good way for people to be able to tag you. I mean, I was working out. I'm going to have to tag your Instagram when I do the interview. So I was like, oh, I'm going to have to learn something new.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Yeah, I mean we basically sort of sit ourselves mostly on Instagram, and I mean to be honest, one of the main reasons why is the social media, most of the interactions that we have are for promoters and to try and get an audience to come to our shows. And the majority of that, I'd say 99% of that in the UK at least, happens on Instagram. So yeah, that's why we don't have Facebook.
Oh, that's right. It was an interesting observation. And the album cover art. Who did the album cover art?
So that was myself. I didn't really have like a clear picture of what the front cover of the album was going to be. And then I really started to try and think about it and try and think about representing the viscerality of some of the songs. I kind of settled on making rot myself, like rotting something. So I went out and bought a pig heart and stuffed it with a chain and a padlock and some, like, got some various vegetation and kind of put it in a bed of it and plopped that in a little Tupperware box, kept it outside of my flat on this, like, on these stairs in the sun, and kept that there for 6 weeks and took a picture of it every day and
Wow.
just watched it like rot and sort of all sink into itself. It was absolutely fucking foul. It was so disgusting.
It would have raked.
Yeah, man, like it was I can't really explain to you how bad that shit smelt. It was so gross. Like I live up in Edinburgh, so the rest of the band, they weren't subject to the rot box. No one else was. It was just me and my partner. And yeah, my partner Nancy, she wasn't best pleased every time I went out.
Oh, I can imagine.
Took the lid off of that rot box, and Yeah, it was a big one, but I'm glad I did it because it's turned out really well.
Well, that's right. It would have been an interesting observation, and also some cool art.
And like the art on the front cover, it's not just a straight picture. It's obviously got a bit of a color edit on it. And I worked with my good friend Joey Pearson, and yeah, he helped me achieve exactly the kind of old, like rotting, color edit on that. So, yeah, shout out Joey Pearson on that.
Nice work. Excellent. So, a little bit about the writing and recording process. How do you guys work?
So, the singles that we bought out, the first four singles, are they were written before we'd ever done a show. Okay, so we tried many, many different avenues of how to write music. The guys are like really handy at creating music in like digital like workspaces, like DAWs and stuff. And we tried doing that, and we wrote some cool songs, but they didn't kind of have the right flavor, and the right like raw attack. So we'd scrapped maybe about eight songs and just returned to the room and just wrote solely in the room. And so that's what those first four singles are. And then for the second half of the songs, which is basically all the songs that are going to be making up the rest of the album that no one else has heard, they had a slightly different approach. We wrote it in the room again, but then I went back to Scotland and wrote the lyrics over the top of them. It's a bit of a mishmash, to be honest, but yeah, it's been the most important thing for us is to write in the room as much as humanly possible. And I always try and explain these things as like capturing like the wild bucking horse in the room. You write this magic riff and you're all on top of this like wild animal and you're all riding it, and it's the most exciting thing in the world. And you change all at the same time, and it's like, oh my God, we're communicating on this primitive musical level. It's incredible. And you finish that, and you're like, how the fuck are we going to do that again? Because that was awesome. It's about capturing that. Yeah, it's about capturing that for us.
Oh, it's an important moment, isn't it? And it's an important, I think it's a good way to write.
Yeah.
And you capture the moment and the rawness, like you say, rather than being sterile and writing separate tracks.
Yeah, exactly. And then all of us as musicians have got room to react to what's in the room at that moment, rather than getting like petri dish samples. And like you can end up overthinking stuff. Yeah, it's, you know, making music for me is it's a privilege, like, and doing vocals, writing songs, writing lyrics, it's all a privilege. Like, I don't take it for granted. And like the kind of music that we're making and the kind of vocals that I'm doing, very difficult to do that without screaming in a room when it's way too fucking loud. You know, like it just is the way it is. Yeah.
Oh no, that's absolutely brilliant. So, how does the music come to you personally? I mean, do you hear like a phrase, or does the music need? Do you have to have the music there to write lyrics, or how does it work for you?
So for me, the like Believe in Nothing and all of the album of Rot, once we established how we wanted to write songs and what worked and what all got us excited, they very quickly, like a sort of world ended up being built in, especially my head. And it was all about sort of making, putting this world together piece by piece, brick by brick. It's like a cold, unforgiving world with like cranked back steel and like cold wind ripping through broken windows. And that is kind of where all the songs sit for me. So, and getting that idea over to the rest of the band, we all got it, and that's kind of how we have approached into that. As far as like lyrics go, I mean, like I said earlier, it wasn't difficult for me to just like spew that stuff out, especially having this sort of conceptual world where all of the songs sit. Like, I'm pretty creative. I can just like turn the tap and it just sticks out. It's kind of disgusting. Yeah.
Oh, it's good that you're able to do that. I mean, because for a lot of musicians, it's the therapy, so to speak. It's a catharsis, and it helps you release all those little demons that are running around in your head.
Yeah, 100%, man. Like the way that I wanted to personally approach lyric writing and Believe in Nothing was a bit of a kick against previous like bands I'd been in. Previous bands I'd been in were like personal purging of trauma, and then going through and gigging all of that was just like repeatedly picking a scab. Useful at first, and then very much not useful, where you have to re-engage with all that trauma. So what I made a very much a definite choice in with Believe in Nothing is the stuff that I'm going to sing about isn't personally traumatic to me. I'm not having to like recite eulogies, etc., of like personal loss. I'm going to talk about worldwide problems, issues that I've kind of half made up in my head and half based on a reflection of what's going on outside everyone's window. So yeah, that was a really enlightening thing about how to write for me.
That's really interesting because I mean, I guess a lot of us don't really think about that aspect when it comes to, somebody's just written about their trauma and they're singing it 10 times, over and over and over. They have to relive it again. I guess, I mean, we don't really sort of think about it too much like that. We just sort of sit there and take the song.
Yeah, it's not something I really considered when I first started doing it either. So after you've like relived, say like a you know a, I'm someone who like both my parents have died. So as a creative person with like a pen in their hand with paper, you're gonna purge that kind of trauma, and then going and reliving that 20 times in front of like whether it be 10 people or 100 people in a room. Doing it over and over again, you're entering that space, and it's not easy to get into it. It's not easy to get out of it. And I learned from that. It's fucking hard. So, yeah, Believe in Nothing was like I scrapped a couple of songs because they're a little bit too close to me personally. Yeah, I think it's really important to be aware of that kind of thing. Takes a strong person to go up on stage and do like 100 dates in a year when they're singing about, I don't know, loss of a loved one.
Exactly. Do your head in.
If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. NPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out npr.nz for more information.
And welcome to Metal to Metal, Metalheads Radio. Local, national, and international news, interviews, and the latest new releases brought to you by NPR, Metal to People's Radio. And we're now going to carry on with our chat with Kane from Believe in Nothing. Before we do, though, we're going to have one more track. We're going to have the track What Would You Do? We will have the last part of the interview, and then we will finish it off with one more song from them, and that's the track Gut.
wanted this. And you all said you would be okay.
Have like a favorite microphone or any type of rituals you do before you sing?
What I used to do is smoke about 10 cigarettes and pace it back and forward, trying to think of the worst things in the world. But what I do now is try and warm up. But to be honest, man, like it's I purposely don't really know what I'm doing with vocals. I'm purposely not someone who watches YouTube videos on how to fry scream or anything like that, and I don't what haven't watched any videos on how to warm up, so I just go in and I'm just trying to put myself in a headspace where I'm screaming like I'm fucking scared, you know, and there's not too many warm-ups for that, so I just like I kind of almost have to blow my voice out to do some stuff in the set. Some of the more like desperate screams can only come when your voice is really quite haggard. So yeah, I don't have a particular ritual. As far as a favorite microphone, I use my own because like I'm pretty messy on stage, so I don't want anyone to catch anything, and I don't want to catch anything from anyone either. So yeah, I just use an SM58 with like quite a smashed up grate on it at the moment. I keep getting electric shocks when I'm playing, which is I haven't really told anyone about.
Well,
I like the danger. It's fun.
exactly. A little bit of inspiration halfway through the set.
Yeah, man. Like we're sound checking or I'm just putting the first vocals down in the set and it's like, oh yeah, okay. That's oh yeah, dangerous. That's th this is real. Let's go. I like that.
A little bit of extra
Yeah,
energy.
exactly. Yeah.
Oh no, that's awesome. So on a slightly different tangent, your first recollections of music, what was it that first made you want to be a musician?
My first recollections of music, and I have to say, I listened to your podcast earlier with King Witch, and
Oh,
I
nice.
think you asked them this question. I was like, that is such a fucking good question. So my dad absolutely loved punk. Yeah. The Clash and the Sex Pistols were just like standard fare in our house. So my first recollection of music was running around the garden singing I Fought the Law and the Law Won just again and again.
That's cool.
And yeah, just doing like stupid stuff like that when I was a kid. I always remember my nan being like, oh, you're going to be on the stage one day. And yeah, that's really special to know that I've ended up being able to, even at such a small level, to be able to do that. Yeah.
Oh, exactly, man. It's awesome. And so, who are your musical heroes and inspirations? Who is it that, I mean, because there's not many people doing the style of singing that you do.
I mean, I love Full of Hell. That's my first sort of port of call. Like, I just think that the way that Dylan Walker uses his voice is just so unnatural and so bizarre, and very musical as well, for such an extreme style. One thing that ended up creeping in to my style of Believe in Nothing, which was very much last minute. Like, we were doing the vocal takes for Complete Desolation, and I said to Jasper as we were recording, I was like, I'm going to try something that I've never done before, so just bear with me. And then that's when I sort of burst into those like desperate, like, ah! ones. So that is very much based off my love for Lingua Ignota. Be able to do screams with no technicality of just pure fear, trying to put fear across, screaming like you're fucking scared. So I'd say those are two of my big vocal inspirations. And I'm a massive Nick Cave fan. So the writing of the songs, like storytelling, putting meat on the bones of stuff, like the storytelling of What Would You Do and Gut is, you know, I'd be writing very differently if I wasn't such a Nick Cave fan. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. And so what are you currently listening to?
You know what? Through before I even knew I was going to be on this podcast, right? My good friend Jake from fellow Eastbourne band Black Groove, he does some of the screaming on the end of our song, What Would You Do? He showed me this incredible lady artist called Aldous Harding, who's from New Zealand.
Oh,
And
yes.
I swear to God, I haven't been able to stop listening to her for the last month, which is a huge juxtaposition to the kinds of fucking horrible music that we're making and doing. But yeah, I've got this massive love for sort of alt folk, and that kind of music, like Aldous Harding, Big Thief, and Fleet Foxes. It's like ear butter to me, and it's so pure, and it almost sounds like when they write a good song, it's like the perfect song, like, you know, like a Neil Young song. Some of those songs are just perfection. And it's really nice to be able to listen to something different than just like absolute riffs all the
Well, you gotta have the contrast, don't you?
Yeah, man. Like, I think people can probably hear that in some of the Believe in Nothing stuff. Like, it's not just straight up like metal or noise. It's kind of a bit all over the place because, you know, music is, it's such rich lineage, and it would be so boring to stick to one narrow corner of it. And I like it all. Well, I like most of it. I don't like some of it.
Very cool, very cool. So getting out on the road, you said you've got some shows coming up.
Yep, that's it. Yep. Do you want me to go through all of them?
No, just tell us about, I mean, what are you most excited about getting back out on the road?
Yeah, we've got a show in Brighton on the 24th of this month, and we're supporting some friends of ours called Mrs. Fright House. They're an amazing two-piece, two incredible ladies making industrial noise, but with classical vocals inflected into it. So we're going down to support them, and then they support us on our tour later on in the year. I'm really excited to play in our hometown of Eastbourne for our tour. We're playing on Eastbourne Pier, which is just a big deal.
That's cool.
Yeah, like a big old Victorian pier, and at a bar at the end called Drop in the Ocean. We've done a show there before, but we haven't headlined there. And yeah, it'll be great to see all of all of our friends and the people that have helped, support us from our very first gig in Eastbourne. We're very proud of the community that we're from, and we're really happy to represent Eastbourne and Eastbourne Music Collective and all the work that everyone has done in the scene. Promoters booking themselves, promoters booking their friends, like putting their wallet on the line for stuff. It's really important. So to be able to come and do a headline show back at home in Eastbourne is going to be really important.
That's awesome. So, what's the scene like? Is it, have you got a strong scene there at the moment?
It's a funny old thing. So, myself and a few other people, including our drummer, we have helped cultivate a scene pretty much from scratch. Like the recession in 2008 absolutely decimated Eastbourne and just closed so many venues, and the music scene just kind of died a death. And we really put our heads together and built a scene from the ground up, mentoring bands, mentoring young bands, middle-aged bands, older bands, just all putting our heads together and trying to make things happen and showing worth in a music scene. And eventually, little bit by little bit, we have ended up making something, and it's probably the biggest achievement of my life. It's incredible to look at how far the Eastbourne music scene's come, and it gives me such pride to like fly the flag for that with Believe in Nothing. Like, we're a fucking Eastbourne band through and through, even though I live in Edinburgh. But yeah, we're recorded the album in Eastbourne, ourselves, a little bit in Brighton, and that's going to be an important one. Yeah.
I know, that's absolutely brilliant. Okay, we've got one last question for you before we let you go, and that is words of advice for young musicians.
Yeah. That is such a tough question. I think words of advice for young musicians would be, don't be a fucking dickhead. Yeah.
It's true.
Like, dickheads don't get asked back. That's something that I've definitely seen across doing gigs for the last few years in multiple bands and through the work in Eastbourne Music Collective. Like, people don't want to work with fucking assholes. You've got to turn up, you've got to be nice, and you've got to be professional. You just be a good person, and that is like most of the work done. You can be a shit band, but the nicest people, and you'll get shows.
Dead straight, eh? It's absolutely right. No, that's absolutely brilliant. Hey, thank you so much for your time. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. It's been absolutely brilliant chatting to you.
Oh, thank you, Terry. I'd love to come back and chat to you once the album's out. And yeah, I just really appreciate you having myself on behalf of Believe in Nothing, and for all the work that you do of the scene as well. Like the interview done with King Witch was beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
So
I really
yeah.
appreciate that, man. It's something that I've enjoyed doing, and it's actually interesting. Up until about 6 months ago, I was only doing interviews for a big label, Nuclear Blast Records, and that was it. And then
Oh,
I
okay.
started reaching out to a few other different outfits that were sending me promos, and started doing a heap of interviews of different bands, and it's been awesome, eh? Absolutely love
Yeah.
doing it, and bands like King Witch and stuff like that. So I've got a band, Mastiff, after this
Oh, yeah.
in about an hour, and I've
Oh,
got
well, say hello to the boys in Mastiff, because yeah, we done a show of them not too long ago. They're really fun.
Oh, that's awesome, mate. And that's it. So it's awesome to especially, I mean, the UK scene seems to be booming, eh? You've got some great music. And
Yeah,
so
definitely. There seems to be a running theme as well, like us and Burner and Grief Ritual and Worn Out and Healing Wound and Mastiff. There's a running theme going through extreme music now. And King Witch even touched on it. It's about how like there is collapse and frailty in the world, and it's kind of being pulled apart like wet tissue paper.
yeah.
Something is going on, and all of us artists and creatives, we can how we feel like there's nothing we can do about it apart from react in a creative way. So although it's such a privilege to be part of the scene, it's also a really scary time. So I hope everyone looks after themselves. And, if our album offers a brief, like, bit of nihilistic reprieve, if that even is a thing, then great. If not, go listen to Out of Harding, I suppose. Like,
Oh no, we need music like yours. It's always extremely helpful to have, because everyone has those thoughts, don't they? And you need to be able to know that you're not quite so alone on that, because I mean, it does feel like a bit of madness out there at the moment, and you don't know whether it's just you thinking it or whether you've been tricked, or it's hard to know.
It feels like an important time to be making music. And it's an important time for people like yourself to be helping promote bands like us. Like, we're a small band, even in comparison to like legends of the UK scene like Mastiff. And just thank you, Terry, for having us
Oh no,
on.
absolute pleasure, absolute pleasure. I thoroughly enjoy doing what I do. I got one last question for you, completely unrelated, and that's your palm tattoo. Yeah, so how's that like? Because a lot of people talk about that doing your palm or the base of your feet, it starts to rub off. How's the ink holding?
I've had this one for like nearly 10 years.
Oh wow.
I got this done by a guy called Chris Higgins, in Eastbourne, and he does a certain style of Croydonesian, he calls it. And do you know what? It was probably the stupidest thing I'd ever done was to get my palm tattooed. It hurt so fucking much. And he's got a special trick to make it stay in that he goes in r too deep to blow the lines out, and he goes over it twice. And I'll never forget the look in his eyes when I sort of looked up to him when he was about a quarter way through and tentatively said, "How long left?" He's like, a long time, man." If you're gonna get your palm done, make sure you go to someone who is brutal.
Yeah, that's right, I quit that job.
support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.
G'day and welcome to Metal 2 Metal, Metalheads Radio. Local, national and international news, interviews and the latest new releases brought to you by NPR, Metal 2 People's Radio. And for this section we were talking with Eric from the band Bergfried. Before we do though, we're going to have the track Dark Wings and then we'll get straight into the interview. Talking with Eric from the band Bergfried. I hope I got that right. They're about to release their newest album, Romantic 3, on the 24th of October, which is just over a month away now. You must be getting excited.
Yes, but you know, it's the album has been finished for a few months now, so at this point, it starts to just be, the excitement is getting lower because there's nothing I can do about it now. So the work is done. So all I can do now is wait and see how it will be received.
Excellent. How long did you take from the start to finish of having this ready?
How long it was like, I think in the end it was around 2 to 3 years, because the first songs were getting written in like late 2022, and even before Romantic 2 came out, I started writing Romantic 3, and so it was like a longer process, and also because of all the people and guests involved, it took longer, to have everything coordinated. And also, there's if you have this long period of time, then you listen again and again, and then you think, oh no, this song is shit, it has to go, and you do another one. And usually I like to finish an album in 2 weeks or something. With like my black metal projects, I do it like that. This is like a new approach, and it's, the longer it takes, the more complex it gets somehow. And then sometimes you have to remind yourself it's just like rock music in the end. So just
Excellent. So you released the first single, Dark Wings. Could you tell us a little bit about that song?
Yeah, it's the opener of the new album, and it's like similar to the opener of Romantic 2, because it describes the situation the protagonist Anna is in. She finds herself in hell, and her lover, who's like captured by the devil, and there's like a big story around it, is nowhere to be found. So she's desperate, and she's still not giving up. So it's already like a bit melancholic, even if it's like a rock song in the end, I would say. But yeah, this is the story behind it, and it's pretty straightforward, and also features the first guest solo of Matt, a friend of mine, who's like crazy good.
Excellent. So obviously it's a concept album. It's got a bit of a story to it.
Yeah, exactly. So it started with Romantic One. I will try to like just really briefly have like say a few sentences about it. So Romantic One starts like two lovers, a man and a woman. Like, they are not lovers at this point, but they meet on the battlefield as commanders of opposing armies. They fall in love when they fight against each other on the Bergfried, that's the tower of a castle in German. And so they decide to kill each other to save like their own like soldiers. And then they want to reunite in the other world somehow. But this doesn't work out, and the lover, the man, like gets lost, and this is now Anna's quest to reunite with him again and to find him. But it doesn't work out in Romantic 2, and yeah, we'll see if it works out in Romantic 3.
Oh no, that's absolutely brilliant. And the album cover art, who did your album art?
Yeah, that was Aaron Lawrence from the UK, and I stumbled across him on Reddit actually, because I did like an open call, and because I wanted to have a like old school fantasy style, and it's like not easy to find people who do it like also on traditional media, and he's did acrylic on wood with this piece, so it really has the look. Because it is like on old media, and yeah, I was so excited when he said, yeah, he really wants to do it, because his art style is like, I think it's crazy good, and it's like almost way too good for this album, I would
Oh mate, no, I mean, but that's what attracts you to music a lot of the time, isn't it?
yeah,
Just,
yeah,
you go
it's
into
really
a record
important for me,
store and you see the
yeah.
album cover and go, wow, I've got to check this out.
Yes, and all the 80s and 90s heavy metal albums, and I've listened to a lot of power metal, and like the early 2000s, like Rhapsody album covers, for example, they are just great. And so yeah, this is still for me my favorite aesthetic. So yeah.
Oh no, that's absolutely brilliant. So, you play all the instruments, is that right on the album?
Not exactly. I did the rhythm guitar and some of the lead guitars, and for two songs I did the bass as well and some of the synth programming. But drums are handled by Fabio. He's the drummer for Annihilator and Bonfire, so he's crazy good. And there's like a few guests also. Bass is by a friend of mine, Sam. Solo guitars are by Matt, and there is some guest singers as well. And Anna, who lives in Australia, close to you, is did the lead vocals, and she's the singer. So it's a two-piece band, I would say. Anna and me are the permanent members, and the rest were like guests on this one. But yeah, I'm really grateful for their contribution.
Excellent. Did you produce the album as well?
No, that was Olof of Enforcer. He did the mixing and the
Oh, nice.
mastering. Yeah. And because yeah, he knows what sound I wanted. And I was talking to him already last year about it, and he was excited to do the mixing for it.
Oh, he's a crazy talented guy that in his own right,
Yes.
isn't he?
Yes. I love Enforcer, and I've loved them like for 10 years since they've started. And it's yeah. It's really great to be working with these people, because you're always thinking about it. Someday maybe you can work together, and you get to that, and now it happened. And also with Fabio, and also with Davide, the singer of Elven King, who has a guest spot. This is I'm really grateful that these people contribute and are part of this project.
Oh, mate, that's absolutely brilliant. So the writing and recording process, how do you work for doing it? Sorry.
Yeah, it's for me, it's like when I write songs, I mostly, I don't like write them on an acoustic guitar or something, but I'll sit down already to record. And so I'll do like I start writing some riffs, and then I record them, and then I program drums to it, and then I continue like writing the song as I record it, so that I have a like a rough sketch. And I do like most of the tracks already, and then when it's done, I re-record it in a proper way. So the album, like, it's like one song after another, and so then I have to think afterwards how they fit the concept and how I can build the story also around it. So the music is like the first thing that happens, and then the story and the lyrics come in the end, actually.
Excellent. Sorry.
All good.
And so when you're writing, do you write with an instrument in mind? Do you hear it with an instrument in mind, or do you just sort of like hear a melody that's sort of instrument-less, if you know what I mean?
I think it's mostly about the melody, because I think for me it's important that a song also works like with just an acoustic guitar, for example, and the voice, so that it has to be like as simple as possible. You can add like layers and harmonies and all of this, but I think the bass line of a song is just like guitar and vocals. So in the end, I don't have like specific instruments in mind. I mean, it's a classic rock lineup, but yeah, it's mostly like the song has to work with guitar and vocals, and the rest is like added on top of it.
So, I mean, it must be different because your whole writing style must be different from doing your older projects, which were generally black metal, to this one, which is sort of more rock based.
Yeah, but also I think for me it was similar, because also the black metal I do is like most of them of that is still really like melodic and catchy, and you could also like have clean vocals and an acoustic guitar for most of these black metal riffs. A lot of like the more melodic black metal songs are, if you strip it down, if you turn the screams to clean vocals, and make it like get rid of the blast beats, then it can be a folk song. So I think the bass line of like most of melodic black metal is also like folk or rock. So it for me it works the same way.
Excellent. And I think I've kind of already asked you, but your favorite instrument, did you have a favorite instrument that you like to play on there? I mean, like you recorded most of them.
Yeah, it's I think it's guitar because this is what I can play like all right, and it's like the easiest for me to create on. I also like working with like keyboards and everything, but I'm not good, so I can maybe start with a simple chord progression, but then I have to do the rest on the computer. Because I'm not like a good keyboard player. So favorite instrument would be the guitar, of course.
Excellent. And how many different guitars did you use for the album? Did you just write with one guitar or did you have a few?
It's just one. I have a Godin Freeware Classic is a like a basic Strat guitar. I also have like a Flying V here, but for like recording and like I've owned this guitar for 20 years, and it's still like I tried different guitars, but I always return to the Strat because it's the easiest, it's the fastest for me to play on, and my favorite.
Excellent. And you're going on a slightly different tangent. Your first recollections of music, what was it that first what made you want to get into music?
It's a good question. I think we had like a first punk band when we were like 11 or 12, because this was like what I have like two older sisters and their friends always like played in shitty punk bands, me as well. And then yeah, you wanted to make music, you wanted to play music because we were listening to a lot of like I remember NOFX, Lagwagon, and all this. Punk bands, and then we wanted to do it ourselves, and it sounded horrible. I still have the recordings, and and then from this that way it like developed, but it was for me a step to just go to creating by myself, like when I was 15 or so, because then I got my first like audio interface and microphone, and this was a completely new approach because I could just do whatever I want. And not talk to people like, yeah, what do you think about this riff? And they say it sucks. And I'm like, man, maybe it doesn't suck, but maybe you suck. But it's this thing. I really like to like try out different things by myself, and not having any compromises with a creative vision. So I really liked like then just doing having like also kind of a contemplative approach to it, just being by myself for a few days, and just create music and write and record, is really fun for me.
So is that why this is pretty much a two-person project,
Yes.
this same one, because of the same
Yes.
ideas?
And also because the people involved are like also living and on different places around the world, so to have like a band lineup in this project, it will take a lot more like time and money, and this is also the reason why we don't play live yet, because it's just right now not possible for us like money wise to be able to play shows.
Fair enough too. Who are your heroes and inspirations then, music wise?
I think like one of the biggest ones is Meatloaf. I think I'm like huge fan since I was a kid, and this is like the whole theatrical, like the dramatic scale of the music is really like also reflects in Backstreet a bit, I think. Apart from that, a lot of 80s hard rock, like also Pat Benatar, what else, like Twisted Sister and all those 80s kind of things. And then there's a big inspiration in power metal, like Stratovarius, Rhapsody, the Brazilian power metal bands, Angra, Burning in Hell, Hebrea, Manowar, of course, as well, like the more epic side. So it's mostly like classic, power metal or heavy metal and hard rock. And this is also what I mostly like listen to still. There's a small part of black metal I also really enjoy, and this is also why I made black metal. But it's mostly the heavy metal side and with the surrounding genres that is still like Primal Fear also, Grave Digger, the German heavy metal bands. Yeah, I could listen to that like every day, all day.
Excellent. And do you have anybody that like is new that is inspiring you?
Like non-music, you mean?
Sorry.
Oh, can you say it again, the question?
Is there anybody new that's inspiring you? Sort of a new artist that's come out in the last few years that sort of inspired you?
That's a good question, because I, of course, I like the Nostalgia album by Enforcer, but when I think about the last years, I mostly listen to like old music or discover like old bands. For example, for like the power metal genre, I think I cannot think about any like recent releases that were really catching me. Of course, I mean the 2015 album of Stratovarius, Eternal, I really liked. But apart from that, it's just like revisiting older stuff for me, to be honest. So I'm not really up to date what's happening in
Yeah.
the music world.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, like as we get older, we start to waft back to what we listened to as kids,
Yes.
and we get really nostalgic about it, and
Yeah.
that's how we sort of do it. It is quite inspiring to see, especially what some of the young people are doing nowadays. I'm getting a bit older, so the younger people,
Yeah.
and it's cool seeing what the young bands are doing because they're bringing it a whole
Yes.
different sort of taste to metal, isn't it?
Yes, and I think, for example, like from Austria, there's Vinator, this heavy metal band that I really liked, and also their new stuff. And I think, like in the classic heavy metal, like old school heavy metal kind of region, there is like a lot of like new stuff still coming up, and it's great. And also, like Visigoth, for example, I really like, and. So I think for that on this kind of genre, there is a lot of new stuff, and there's a lot of really young bands, and they do great music. So I think like for heavy metal, the future looks bright. So you're right. I forgot about that. This is happening, and this is a really good thing.
Oh, definitely, eh? So you talked about it being quite logistically difficult, but is there ever going to be any chance of getting out on the road and doing this as a band?
It would be nice, but right now I don't see it happening, at least in the next 1 2 years. It will change at some point. Maybe if this album gets like the great feedback, we can start to think about it. But for now, I think it will stay a studio project.
Does the story end in this album, or is there more to it?
There is a whole concept. I think I already told you, this lyrical concept of like eternal love, transcending like every universe and the boundaries of time. So from Romantic One to Romantic Three, it's actually like 1,000 years that are happening. So
Yeah, but do we reach the end of the story at the end of the album, or is
yes.
there going to be a part four?
The end of the story, for now. So I think the next release will not cover this specific story. So it will not be Romantic 4. There won't be like a Romantic for the next release. Maybe at some point we can revise it and get back to it, but for now it's finished.
But there's still going to be another Burg Fried album,
Yes, for
or
sure.
Oh,
Yeah, a few
excellent.
songs are already written, so yeah, we're gonna continue for sure.
Oh, no, that's absolutely brilliant. So release formats, and how can people find your stuff? I mean, you've got High Roller Records. Do you guys like have Facebook and Instagram and all that sort of carry
Yes.
on?
Yes, we have Facebook, we are on Instagram, Bergfried Official. You can find us, and on Bandcamp, you can still order like vinyl and CDs. Tape is sold out from our side, and one a variant of the vinyl. But High Roller Records still has a stock, and I think there will be like several distribution channels where you can get it also worldwide.
So you got vinyls, did you say?
Yes, vinyl, CD, and tape.
Excellent. How
So we
important is it
have
to get vinyls out?
it's I love the format. I think it's like the best to present the artwork, and it's also like a great thing to collect. And for me, it's also the format that people are like most likely to buy. So because this is like the collectors who also, of course, there's a lot of CD collectors. I myself have more CDs than vinyl, but yeah, for me, it's like crucial to have it released on vinyl, and it's just great. And also, you know, the artist, cover artist, took did so great work, and to see it like on a grander scale, it's great.
Excellent. I'm a big fan of vinyl, so I'm glad
Yeah.
when I hear bands are doing that. So it's absolutely fantastic.
Yes.
Okay, I've got one last question before we let you go, and that is words of advice for young musicians.
Yeah, there is just like you can just do it, and I would just you know, if you have like people around you who are into the same kind of music, then just start to jam with them, and it's like maybe start with cover songs, or maybe start with your own. And I don't think like practicing is the most important, because I never did it, but I think it's like really important to just, you know, be consistent and just you know, do the music you want to, and then you see, okay, I have to practice to get there, then you have to do it. But if you just want to play punk music, then that's fine, and you can stay with three chords. And if you don't have people around you who are into the same kind of stuff, then just get yourself cheap audio interface and download Reaper and start to record some riffs and show them to your friends. And if they say they suck, maybe they're right, and you should continue recording. But maybe they're wrong. So I would just yeah, you know, just continue and just do it, just record it. And also, don't be afraid of like releasing also at an early stage, I think, because it can break you. If I mean, I still don't like negative feedback, and it's still annoying, of course. It's not like, ah, I don't care, but you know, it's like even like really crazy good, great bands, legends, they have like the most amount of haters. So yeah, just go ahead.
Oh, mate, that's absolutely brilliant. Actually, I've got one more question for you because I missed it. After Bergfried, what's your next project? Are you going straight onto another album, or have you got any more black metal sort of stuff working on, or?
Yes, so there's like two more rather black metal projects I'm working on right now. It's the next Sturmwächter album. The debut was last year in August. So this is more like, it's melodic black metal, but a bit like with a like nature forest kind of theme, with German lyrics. And then there is another project I'm working on. It's a new one. It's called Rheingold. It's pagan metal. So because I was always a fan of that and never did something in this direction, so yeah, this will be, I think, end of the year, there will be the first new songs for that project.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app.
G'day and welcome to Metal to Metal, Metalheads Radio. Local, national and international news, interviews and the latest new releases brought to you by MPR, Metal of Two Peoples Radio. This section of the show, we were lucky enough to be talking with Jimmy from the band Mastiff. Before we do, we're going to be playing their latest single, and that's Decimated Graves. Then we'll have the interview, and it's just one part. We're talking with Jimmy from the band Mastiff. They're about to release their new EP, For All the Dead Dreams. On October the 24th, you must be excited about that.
I am, nice to have some new stuff coming out eventually, thankfully. So and Church Road have been good enough to let us release it on their label, so
Excellent. How many releases have you done so far?
So we've done three full-length albums, and then we've got a few EPs and bits and bobs and singles here and there, but yeah, pretty much, basically three full albums, so.
Excellent. And so, what made you decide to do an EP this time around?
We wanted to get something together quicker, I suppose. And it's a slightly different vibe to the other stuff. Not massively, but it's more of a hardcore feeling to it. So we were sort of working on, a collection of hardcore tracks, really.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's brilliant. And so, how are you guys going to celebrate the release of it?
So we've got a few dates up and down the country, but whether your listeners are aware of a band called Raging Speedhorn, so we've been lucky enough to be asked to support them on their 25th anniversary tour. So pretty much that'll be the launch, I guess. It's a few weeks after it comes out, but you can't time these things perfectly every time.
No, that's right. And well, it's interesting actually. A lot of bands are going out beforehand now, before they do the release. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, I don't get that. I don't get that because your fans want to know. Certainly you'd hope they want to know, the tracks a little bit so they can at least smash noses when the appropriate breakdown comes along.
Well, that's right, but no, it is a weird thing. But yeah, it seems to work for some bands. So you've released at least one single so far. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so A Story Behind Every Light is was the first single off it. It's basically about it's quite a deep song for me, really, because it's about I lost a little lad 15 years ago now, but it never gets easier. And after we lost him, I had some pretty dark thoughts, and it's based around those sort of thoughts. And then my daughter came along, and realizing that, doing what you sometimes wish you could do, won't make the situation any better, and it certainly won't bring people back. So it is a personal song, but again, it's open to interpretation. But that's pretty much what it's about.
Oh, that's excellent. And yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of music, heavy music, isn't it? Being able to get rid of the therapy to an extent.
Yeah, and I know, people can say, well, that's what you a lot of my lyrics are about, that sort of situation, but it does keep rearing its ugly head in the nasty way, the nasty side of it. But again, it does, yeah, it is nice to be able to vent my spleen or whatever, or discharge my brain a little bit. So yeah, it does, yeah, it is nice to be able to do this.
Oh, no, that's excellent. And so the album cover art, who did the album cover art?
That's done by True Spilt Milk. So he's done our last two albums as well. He's become a friend of ours now. We love working with him. He's just so easy to work with, and he always hits the nail on the head with what we ask him, or what sort of general direction ideas we come up with. So we've been lucky enough to be able to, work with the guy, I suppose.
Excellent. And so, I mean, like when it comes to creating your videos and all that sort of stuff, is that something that you guys do independently, or do you guys get somebody else in to come and do that sort of thing for you?
So we've been lucky enough to work with a guy called Stuart Baxter, who's done our last two albums worth of videos. He knows what he's doing with us. Again, it's like working with True Spilt Milk. It's a nice relationship to have. We come up with the ideas, and thankfully Stuart can or has been able to facilitate what we've stupidly come up with. So if anybody watches, if you want to go on YouTube and check out Serrated, that was the last one we did. It's quite a funny ode to Spinal Tap sort of thing. So
Well, that's cool. They've got their new movie coming out too, haven't they?
So it's one of the, it's just a piss take of, you know, all the stupid things that people ask you when you're in a band.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm a culprit of that
Oh no, not that. No, it was more like when you're at a gig and they want you to, you know, I've got you a rider, here's a bag of crisps, you know, those
myself.
sort of things. And yeah, how many beers do you want? Well, because there's three over there. And you know, things like that, stupid things like that. But yeah, it was a fun day, fun video shoot that. Very drunk by the end of it. So yeah.
It's even better. Excellent. So, could you tell us a little bit about the writing and recording process and how you guys work?
So we are a live writing band. We go into a practice room and we smash the music out first, and then I'll come along and ignore it completely and try and write something that don't fit lyrically wise. Yeah, it's just we're an old school band. None of this sort of digital writing. A couple of times the rest of the band have come in with nearly full songs written, but normally we'd knock them about and make them fit a little bit more to what we are sometimes. And it's just a vibe in a room. You know, it's trying to capture that lightning in a bottle sort of thing. So you can spend hours and hours and hours writing a track and then not like it, but then you can spend 10 minutes on a track and it's the best thing you've ever written. So it's always better to be in a room and feel it out between each other.
Well, that's a, I mean, it makes for quite different music, doesn't it? And you really do capture a vibe. You know, I mean, you look at a lot of bands doing the old cut and paste thing and, you know, just sending in different tracks and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I mean, it's got its place and there's nothing wrong with it, but it has a certain sterility to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. We're, you know, with us being a hardcore-y, I don't know, people say sludgy band, you can't, it's pointless. You take that, you beat the bloody energy out of it almost sometimes. Like you said, sterile. It's nice to have. All right, it might not be absolutely perfect, but people get the vibe better, I think. There's a, you know, like you said, there's a place and time for, you know, certain bands to do it, but we're definitely not one of those. And we don't even record to a click track because we're too stuck in our ways. And Joe, who's engineered our last few, you know, albums and stuff, he's always like, "Do you not fancy trying it with a click track?" And we're like, "No, it's just you miss the swing of it, I guess. You lose the swing."
You do, you lose the groove, don't you? There's definitely. I mean, it's important part of being in a band, isn't it? And it's also because it's not just about the making of the music, it's about the whole vibe between the group of yous.
Well, yeah, exactly. And also you've got to be able to pull it off live. And we don't use backing tracks or anything like that. There's no, you know, no tricks or anything like that. So we are literally what we record, we can play. So we've done that with every song we've ever recorded, I think. So if we had the time, we would be able to, you know, pull every song out of the bag.
Well, that's it. And, I mean, you do see these bigger bands that have to have backing tracks and all that because, yeah, they can't play half the stuff that they've written.
And that, you know, and that harks back to, again, it's a sterile sort of vibe, isn't it? You know, I'm sure there's more bands that do it than people realize, but it's not for us, so.
No, you're right. And a lot of bands do it, especially now that with the digital age and technology has made it a lot easier. But it.
I mean, we now, I suppose, as close as we've got to it is that our guitarists now have No, amp heads. It's we've gone to foot pedal amps and stuff. It does make, moving about the country a lot easier. I've got to say that, instead of the great big 25 kilogram bloody guitar heads. So I'm sure the load in and load out lads enjoy it as well a bit more. So
More time for the drums.
drums and drunks.
Oh, absolutely brilliant. How does the music come to you lyrically? I mean, like you have talked a little bit about how one of the songs came to you, but how does the music, I mean, is it just lyrics that pop into your head? Do you just like get like a bit of a phrases in that, or how does it work for you?
As I've said, I've got quite a hefty sort of emotional thing to pull on. Pretty much, it's what's the flavor, not particularly the flavor of the month, but what, we were never a political band really, and this one has got three tracks on it that are, politically charged. Obviously, we've got the situation in the Middle East as well, and it's that writes itself. You can't ignore that sort of shit. So one of our tracks called "Decimated Grave" on the new one. That's what that's aimed at. The Palestinian, situation. You can't even imagine what it's like to live that. So that's without getting too politically charged, that's where that comes from. But again, yeah, it's just I get a sort of I go more for the vibe of the track and then work out what sort of lyric content it will be. I get the normally I come up with the verse, there's chorus first, and then work my way back to the verses. So,
Do the other guys give you sort of like pointers in what they think the song might be about, or is it all up to you?
majority is up to me. On our last album, James, our guitarist, just lost his mum whilst we were nearly going in to record. And I was having a bit of writer's block, so double-edged sword. I gave him. It was like, please, if you want to write anything personally yourself, fire away. And that's where bloody hell, Void came from on the Precipice. So he pulled a blinder with that one. And I like I said, that's an ode to his mum, but a lot of our stuff is, negatively charged.
Well, there's a lot of negativity out there, isn't
There is, yeah, there is definitely, yeah.
there?
It writes itself as negativity.
Oh, it sure does, eh? And like as I was talking with the dude before, from bloody Believe in Nothing, he was saying that, just the whole world situation, it's like there's so much crazy shit going on, what is there not to write about?
Well, it's just, the fucking world's fucking hell. This is as close as I've ever felt to, having panic attacks about this sort of shit. It's just a fucking shithole at the moment. So, yeah.
No, you're right. It's pretty scary out there. Do you have a microphone of choice, and do you have any sort of like rituals before you sing? Do you have to do warm-ups, or what
No,
sort of process do you go through?
I have started doing warm-ups. Age isn't a favorable thing for your vocal cords.
No.
So I am doing warm-ups now. I've got a Sennheiser. I don't even know what the number is on it anymore. It's that old and it's beaten up, but it's my, I have to tape it a certain way before we play, so I tape the lead to it a certain way so I can hold it a different way. I do have rituals. I have to have I don't know if you have it in New Zealand, but I have to have Desperado beer because that just seems to work for my vocal cords. And I always try to have a Jameson's before we go on.
Nice.
Even though I am trying to cut down drinking wise.
Oh,
I'm
you're just
failing piss poor probably, so
a... Well, you got to have a little bit of inspiration in there, don't you?
A little bit of Dutch courage, yeah.
That's the one. Awesome. So on a slightly different tangent, your first recollections of music, what was it that first inspired you to become a musician?
So my first dabble with the devil's music was I remember hearing Back in Black by DC, and begged and begged and begged my mum and dad to take me into town and get this bloody single. And my dad was like, "Oh God, okay." So he took me in. I bought that, and I think I bought the Flight of Icarus the same day.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, the rest of it is pretty much a downward spiral from there. What the musician part was, we were weirdly enough in a pub, and someone bet us. We realized there was enough people around the table that were able to play musical instruments. I'm not saying they were musicians; they are now, but at the time, they were. And me and another kid was like, "Well, we'll sing." And someone bet us that we could wouldn't be able to play a gig within, I think they said, 6 months. And I think we pulled it off in about 3 months. We had our first gig, and the rest is history. We smashed it out of the park, I think, and smashed the toilet as well at the same time in the venue. So, but.
Oh, excellent. Were your family musical?
So my uncle is a folk musician. My granddad played guitar. My dad plays guitar very loosely, and my brother plays guitar in, and he's also a vocal. He does vocal. Sorry, he does singing in a cover band, which is a local cover band. So there is a little bit in there, I suppose, but I'm probably the least musical person in the family.
You are fronting a band.
That's always the joke, so.
That's real cool. So who are your heroes and inspirations? Who is it that you sort of like to think of as the people that you like to sing for or sing as?
So, probably the most, reputable one, and the one that I always quote, or as my inspiration, is Vincent Bennett out of Acacia Strain. Just the guy's, he's just unstoppable, and he's always an inspiration to, try different vocal styles and stuff like that. Who else? I don't know. Musically wise, I suppose I like, weirdly enough, I love stuff like Van Halen and what have you. I'm not into death metal as such. I am, I do. 200 Stab Wounds, that last album was amazing. But I'm an old school bloke, so do you know what I mean? It was like bands like Fudge Tunnel, if you remember them. Helmet are a massive influence on me. Just things like that. More, slightly more musical than what we are.
Oh, you got to have some inspiration from somewhere, don't you? Exactly. So what are you currently listening to? Do you, I mean, like some people go back to their old stuff and they just sit, listen to the same stuff, or are you listening to new
No,
stuff?
well, no, I am always checking out new stuff. We've got a podcast over here called The Heaviest, and they always point me in the direction. I know those two lads, and they're always, they've got the finger on the pulse. So there's always new stuff to listen to. There's so much now, and so much amazing stuff. There's always going to be Davidian, isn't there? Everybody listens to Davidian. You can't get away from that. But I don't know. I'm actually a Taylor Swift fan as well. So
Oh, fair enough. You were on age there,
yeah.
right?
So yeah, it's yeah, we did some shirts for when we played Damnation in the UK. We did some shirts with Air on it, and they sold out. So there's obviously quite a lot of Swifties involved in the metal scene.
Well,
Well,
yeah,
certainly in the
tax all
UK.
cons.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Excellent. Did you guys get to do anything for with the European summer festival season?
No, not this time around. We're hoping next year. It was just, yeah, we completely, timed it wrong. And obviously moving labels and stuff like that. And so, yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed, we get to, fly around Europe next summer, possibly. So, touch wood. If
Yeah.
anyone wants us, reach out. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah, I mean the festivals are pretty big over there. I mean, like we don't have
Oh, they're
anything like that here
massive.
in New
They're
Zealand.
mental. Yeah, there's what's the one in France? Bloody hell.
Hellfest.
Hellfest. Oh, that's another level. That is just unbelievable. But I mean, basically leave it built all year round is it must make it a lot easier.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, back in the old days, it used to be just Wacken was the band
Yeah.
and that was the big festival. But nowadays, with stuff like Hellfest, they sort of almost stepped up into the plate.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. I would say that's probably one of the biggest ones in the world now. I would say that's probably, well, I can't even think of anything else. What is it? The Coachella maybe? I don't know what the size of that is, but obviously that's not catering to our styles particularly, but yeah, it's
Yeah.
yeah, I really don't know anything other than that being big enough to carry it off, I suppose.
Yeah. Oh, it's
Do
pretty
you what
cool
do you have
to.
it? What do you have in New Zealand?
We don't have anything like that. We have to go to
Nothing.
Australia.
Jeez, man.
We
And then
have
that's
some
not.
minor festivals, but nothing really. Our country's too small. Yeah. We used to have a thing called the Big Day Out, and that was
Yeah, I
awesome.
remember that. Yeah.
It was huge, and but that finished probably about 10 years ago. We had our
Yeah,
last
yeah.
one of those, so
That was Metallica
we get a
headlined
few.
that, didn't they?
It sucks, but we get most of the time after like we go to Australia. We had Download Festival was
Oh, you got one right, okay.
we had that for Australia, and then they had Knot Fest, the
Oh,
Slipknot thing.
yeah.
But they don't do too bad. They've got a thing called Froth and Filthy, which is like a beer fest with metal and stuff. So that's
Oh,
next
yeah.
year over in Australia. But yeah, New Zealand, we just don't sadly have anything like that anymore. Hopefully somebody will do something soon because we really need it.
Well, I'm sure there must be enough for you to.
Well, you'd
I know
think
that I
so.
know it's such a big country, and there's not population-wise, you're not massive, but it's yeah. Surely there must be enough loopy sods out there to get some sort of festival up together.
Well, you'd think so. We get like we're getting a few decent bands. Like we've got Sabaton here next week. We've got
Okay.
Opeth coming through. We've got there's plenty of bands that
Cool.
come through, but they just come through on their own. So that's cool. So I mean,
Bit
like
alien.
COVID knocked the scene quite a lot
Oh, did it?
downstairs. So it's still taking a fair amount of time to rebound from that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were, I suppose we were lucky up here. We're quite, yeah, it bounced back fairly sharp.
Yeah.
But it has again, that's another thing that's fucked the world, hasn't it? So.
Damn straight. So getting out on the road, you must be excited to get out on the road at some stage soon.
Yeah. Like I say, we've got a few one-off gigs and festivals, smaller festivals and what have you, around the UK, and then the Raging Speed On thing is that's going to be quite good. There's I think the full tour's nearly sold out now, so that's eight UK dates that have sold out. Whether that's anything to do with us being the support or whether it's just because it's their 25th album. I'd like to think it was a little bit because it's us as well on there, but that's only me thinking.
Oh, you've got a decent reputation from what I can hear.
Oh well, that's good then. Yeah, well, you can't, you know, we don't big ourselves up. We're quite a negative sort of thinking band, if you like. Yeah, we never believe in ourselves. So it's nice to somebody who's, you know, out in New Zealand has had a reputation. So okay.
Yeah, no. I was talking to somebody who was raving about you, so it's always good.
Yeah.
One last question before we let you go, and that is words of advice for young musicians.
Don't fucking bother. No, fucking hell. Stick to your guns. Don't sell yourself short. Fucking and believe in yourself. That's the only thing you can do is believe in your own shit. 'Cause you know, there's enough people out there who'll fucking beat it out of you and tell you a lot of shit and
Yeah.
hate on you and all the rest of it. So don't read the reviews unless they're good.
Yeah,